Hello and welcome back to Dropping the Hammer with Daniel McFadden, presented by the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. This is my weekly NASCAR podcast, and this week we have a great show for you. We have an interview with the one and only Mark Martin, the Arkansan, who has 40 NASCAR Cup Series wins, including two at North Wilkesboro Speedway. But before we get to that interview and we get to talk about North Wilkesboro Speedway, we're going to talk about the Goodyear 400 at Darlington Raceway, which was won by William Byron on Sunday. And with me to talk about that race, as always, is Jared Haas.
Howdy. Man, we threw it back all the way to Darlington this weekend. Had a pretty, I would say, a dynamic race where it was just one and two was basically Martin Truex and Ross Chastain's race, and it just fell in William Byron's lap.
Thanks to Calamity Corner there in turn one and two. And was it multiple overtime restarts?
Yeah, well, I mean, they repaved. Just the one. Yeah, that's where they had that repave on that over in turn one and two. It was just that one. It was lap 293. It was the distance was 293. And that most recent caution, that was the end of the race, which I believe was for that Ross Chastain wreck was the only green-white checkered.
It's really weird to say the big one at Darlington Raceway, but we got that twice in this race.
And even in the Xfinity race,
oh my God,
people don't realize how tight of a track Darlington is.
It's one of those tracks where big ones don't happen often, but when they do, they really happen, and we got two cases of that this weekend at the track Too Tough to Tame. But yeah, William Byron won, third win of the season. His most in a season so far for the Hendrick Motorsports driver. It was also the third win, the 100th win ever for the number 24 car, with William Byron's 7 career cup wins and Jeff Gordon's 93 cup wins. So overall, I thought this was a pretty good race. Like you mentioned, this looked like it was going to be like a Martin Truex Jr. domination fest. But once stage two got going, that went away quickly.
You forgot to add Cecil Gordon added 0 wins to that total.
Cecil Gordon. Okay.
No relating to Jeff Gordon, but yeah, I mean, it looked like that traditional Martin Truex Jr. was going to throw it back and dominate back to the Furniture Row days like he did a couple years ago. But it just seemed like his car fell off, and you picked Ross Chastain to win.
I did.
I was looking through. I don't know who I picked from the podcast last week. We'll review the tape again. But Martin Truex was my pick after seeing what he did in qualifying and practice. I knew he had a pretty fast car, seeing what he laid down. And he showed it early. It just, he got in trouble, had a bad pit stop, and like I said, lost, you know, got in that wreck involved too. So, end of the day, it just became William Byron's race. And let's run through the top 10, shall we? We had William Byron come home in first. Kevin Harvick was in second. Chase Elliott was in third. Brad Keselowski finished in fourth. Bubba Wallace is finished in the fifth position. Harrison Burton, good run for him in his, I believe, 50th Cup start, finished sixth. Kyle Busch was seventh. Justin Haley is eighth. Ryan Blaney ninth. And rounding out the top 10 is RFK's racing Chris Buescher.
And I just now noticed that 11th place was Todd Gilliland.
Yeah.
That's a great run.
A lot of good runs for teams that need it, like Justin Haley. I think he finished well here last year, too. Justin Haley did.
I think it was third.
He was like third or fourth.
Something like that, yeah.
He was in the top five during this race last year. And like I said, this year he came up with another top 10. So a lot of good runs, especially Harrison Burton on that front. But, you know, two through four.
It helps when there's two wrecks of 9 cars and 8 cars.
But 2 through 4 kind of benefited. I think it was the 4, the 6, and the 9 was involved in one of those wrecks, I believe.
Harvick was in it,
and so was Chase Elliott. And they gave him that track position back. What were your overall thoughts on the being in the incident, but keeping up the pace?
I believe, like, if you're in the wreck, you shouldn't get to keep your spot. Like, that doesn't make any sense. I know it comes down to timing loops mostly, but like when other cars have like gone past you and you're stopped there in the middle of the track, having been in the wreck, I don't think you should get to keep that position. Yeah, but Kevin Harvick definitely benefited from that because he was able to go up and finish second. But I know Bubba Wallace also he finished fifth, and he was the most vocal about where the cars were put on the restart. Because like he thought he should have been in front of guys who were in that wreck, including Harvick.
Yeah, well, I saw, what was it, too, with his radio transmission. Bubba Wallace got back there a little bit after he was, I think it was some, he got back a few positions where he was instead of second place behind Martin Truex, and he asked his spotter, Freddie Kraft, is it pretty easy to pass here at Darlington? And Freddie Kraft was, sure, can't, you know, it's pretty good, easy to pass. And then he went to Channel 2 and he's like, I had to lie to him. He told Booty Barker that. I mean, it's that confidence, you know, just trying to build that confidence. But we saw that perfect example of, it's kind of surprising that even with this, how much tire wear has been affected, that it was really hard to pass once you got that track position. It was just one of those type of races fell into William Byron's lap.
Yeah, and with that overtime restart and all the calamity of that wreck beforehand, at the end of the race, the top 19 positions, as we know this before we started recording, the top 19 positions in this race only led a combined 28 laps.
Well, like I said, that's when you get quite a few of your leaders of Larson, Chastain, and Truex get wrecked out late. That's going to shuffle up the order. But, yeah, I mean, it was surprising. Even, like, the top 10, it was 19 laps between the top 10 cars.
So, and speaking of Mr. Ross Chastain, here we are yet again after a race weekend. And what's the main thing we're talking about, or anyone's talking about? Ross Chastain. It's like the last 4 weeks.
Yeah.
He's been pretty much the dominant headline this time for his contact on that last restart, or next to last restart, with Kyle Larson at the front of the field that took them out and then took a bunch of guys with them. And you know how bad you have to be doing to make Rick Hendrick mad?
It was Ross Chastain realizing this. If you were going to have the lead, whoever's going to come out in front between the one and the five, that's just who's going to win. And Ross Chastain was going to try to bring him up in the wall a little bit, have Kyle Larson hit in the wall, and he scoots away. He was going to do that because, at the end of the day, even though Ross Chastain leads the points, mm-hmm. a win locks him in. And ironically, even though Ross Chastain wrecked out, finished 29 points, he only lost 4 points to second place Christopher Bell. Ross Chastain, after all this, still has a 27-point lead over Christopher Bell, which is kind of bonkers to believe. Well, but
stage wins, man.
Yeah, stage points. Wins, stage points, big factor on this point. But, I mean, I agree. I mean, this was kind of more the egregious of, I would say, the more three incidents. I think the Ross Chastain and Noah Gregson incident, you know, Hard's Racing, I felt like it was more of a win-win. Noah Gregson's trying to get respect. Ross Chastain racing hard. It didn't seem like it was a negative effect. You had the lap car incident was not good. This, you know, even though you're racing for the last few laps,
yeah.
you're trying to put him in the wall to win.
Well, I think Ross got cocky because you go back to stage two and you have a restart with Ross on the inside and Larson on the outside, and he successfully fended off Larson to take the lead, which was, in my opinion, a masterful two laps that Ross put together to get the lead from Larson. And he was trying to do it, I think, the same thing, and he just stepped over the line.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's one of those. Are we going to be talking about this in September, October, November?
I hope not.
Not really. I mean, if it's anything, it's just those stage points. But, I mean, this is not going to be the effect. The big thing is Ross Chastain's looking for is breaking that winless streak and looking for his first win of the year. Because, again, with the system, with Matters, and a little bit of a preview, this is how the system works, is if you win, you're in.
Yeah.
And if you get those stage points, you're good, so you can take more of those risks.
But yeah, like I said, you have to be doing some pretty egregious stuff to make Rick Hendrick of Hendrick Motorsports mad. After the race, I read the quotes from Rick Hendrick in the winner's press conference. And I've never read or heard Rick Hendrick be that critical of a driver before, ever. Can you remember?
No, I mean, he's a pretty calm matter type of owner. I mean, these are not those people that... Rick Hendrick's not the brash person that's going to be throwing around his, you know, opinion like that with Ross Chastain. It's just Ross Chastain crossed the line and Kyle Larson to the past 3 weeks. Well, I mean, also, I mean, he got taken out with Denny Hamlin, but to the past 3 weeks.
Plus Talladega.
Yeah, Talladega was involved in that wreck as well, too. So I think Larson, they realize the speed is just that the outside factor is the Ross Chastain effect.
Yeah. And so here is that here's the audio that I mentioned of Rick Hendrick. Again, really not happy with the way Ross Chastain is racing these days, but here's what Rick Hendrick had to say.
Dustin Long, NBC Sports. Rick, while you're celebrating a win by one of your cars, the number five could have been in contention to have won today and involved in the incident with the one. It's the third time he's been damaged by the one, and either directly or indirectly the last month. Has Ross Chastain crossed a line?
I think you can ask any driver in here that he's wrecked or been involved with him. He doesn't have to be that aggressive. And I guess at this point in the race, maybe you're super aggressive, but you just don't run people up in the fence he's going to make a lot of enemies. That it's hard to win a championship when you got a lot of paybacks out there. And he's got so much talent. I think if he just calmed down there's a time to race. Dale Earnhardt told me one time, he said, I won't name the driver who drove for me, but he said, he's got all the talent. He just doesn't know how to race. And meaning he just knows when to race, when to push it. He's got a lot of talent, but he's making a lot of enemies out here. And I mean, Kyle, now this one in Dover, and it's getting Talladega. It's really getting old with these guys.
And obviously these guys are competitors, but this is another Chevrolet driver. So
I don't care if he's driving a Chevrolet if he wrecks our cars. I don't care. And I've told Chevrolet that. If you wreck us, you're going to get it back. And if you don't do it, they'll run all over you. So, I'm loyal to Chevrolet, but when somebody runs over us, then I expect my guys to hold their ground. And I'm not going to let them ask them to yield just because of the Chevrolet.
And one last thing, thank you, is do you have to get involved? Or is this all about Kyle? I know Kyle typically is not a confrontational type of person. That's not in his nature. Is that something that needs to be discussed at a higher level? Or is that something that Kyle's just got to stick him in the wall at some point?
Well, I would think Justin would have a conversation and say, we're going to, it's going to be hard. Again, if you have a lot of people, want to pay you back, then it's hard to win a championship that way. And he's got talent enough to do that. But we don't want to get knocked out of, if you look at the points that Larson's lost because of that and the race here today. I mean, I think somewhere in the stages he was all over Larson. So, I mean, the drivers have to settle that, whatever I say to the owners or NASCAR. NASCAR wants to get in it. They did with Jeff Bodine and Dale Earnhardt when I was going through all that, and they put a stop to it.
But this
is just not between two guys, so.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. So, one last note on Ross Chastain. Like you said, he's still leading the points. Last week we talked about, I was curious, what's the latest in a season a driver has led the points when they got their first win of the season? And now Ross Chastain still leads the points after 14, going into race 14. Race 14 will be, 2 weeks
at
Charlotte. So I reached out to NASCAR and asked for this information. And they said, in the playoff era, it looks like the latest a driver as the points leader got their first win of the season was Tony Stewart in 2009 at Pocono Raceway, and that was June 7th, 2009, race 14. So now we'll see if Ross can finally break that out of that rut that he's been since last April. I mean, he hasn't won a race since April, but he's the face of NASCAR right now.
I mean, the thing is with Ross Chastain, it feels like every weekend and week out, he was up there in the front. I mean, you even look at it as more of his championship run. You see, like, the last few races of 2022, third at Phoenix, fourth in Martinsville, second in Homestead, second in Las Vegas, had issues at Roval, but even fourth at Talladega. Mm-hmm. He's been up front with that in most of those races. It's just been – he hasn't been able to seal the deal and get the win.
But he's got a fast car. Mm-hmm. Unlike Daniel Suarez isn't nearly – isn't showing the same speed that Ross Chastain is.
I think also, too, he's had some bad luck as well. I mean, he got involved in a wreck here at Darlington, finished 34th.
Yeah. But anyway, it's officially North Wilkesboro week.
Yes.
Jared, after 27 years.
Yeah.
27 years since NASCAR has held an event at North Wilkesboro Speedway in North Wilkes County, North Carolina. We're going back to this crud.
It's between. I've heard some speculation. It's more than a half a mile, but it's like, I think it's, I've heard 5/8 mile.
It is 0.625 miles.
Yeah.
0.625 mile short track. The main event, Sunday on Fox Sports 1. I believe that's at 7 Central Time. The main event is 200 laps. The day before, there'll be two heat races, 60 laps each. But it's the first NASCAR race.
There's a lot going on this weekend. 1996. I mean, you got the pit stop challenge as well, too. You even have a truck race in between that. The trucks have raced here before at North Wilkesboro. So, I mean, there's a lot of action packed this weekend.
So, the race surface at North Wilkesboro, it has not been repaved since 1981.
Yes.
You know what else happened in 1981?
I think somebody made their debut.
Yes, a 22-year-old driver named Mark Martin out of Batesville, Arkansas, made his first career NASCAR Cup Series start at North Wilkesboro Speedway. He would go on to win 40 NASCAR Cup races, including two at North Wilkesboro, and he also won the last Truck Series race at North Wilkesboro. So with this being such a big week, I finally wanted to bring Mark Martin, Arkansas native, onto this podcast to talk to him about the track's return and a whole lot of other stuff.
Even talked about Ross Chastain in that interview.
Yes, he does. He gives his thoughts on Ross Chastain and also against people wanting to compare Ross to Dale Earnhardt. Mm-hmm. And he was very pointed. He doesn't want to compare anyone to
Dale
Earnhardt.
Oh, yeah. Well, we got to wait and see, yeah. But let's dive into this interview. I mean, this is some good stuff here, so...
But here he is, Mark Martin, NASCAR Hall of Famer, and one of the 75 greatest NASCAR drivers. So here it is, our interview with the great Mark Martin. So I'll on behalf of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, thank you for joining us today, Mr. Martin, on Driving the Hammer.
My pleasure.
So can I call you Mark? Is that okay?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm Dan McFadden, and the other guy with me is Jared Haas. He's my co-host. Say hi, Jared.
How you doing, Mark?
Good, buddy. Looking good.
It's a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you.
So what is going on in Mark Martin's neighborhood? What's going on in your world these days?
Well, I'm in the shop tinkering on stuff, my motorhome. Tow car and whatnot.
So I noticed that you weren't in Darlington over the weekend for all the 75th anniversary and stuff. I'm guessing from a distance, what would you think of everything that transpired over the weekend?
Oh, it's fantastic. I was really sad to not be able to make that trip, but I just couldn't make it work. You know, we got other things going and priorities, and things are different for me now than they were when I raced, and that was number one priority. So I loved it, man. What they do at Darlington is just fantastic and so great. It's so much fun to get all the old guys together and talk and tell stories and meet with the fans. The fan response is just overwhelming.
So what did you think of the race itself? If you had the chance to watch it.
I did. I thought it was a good race. The racetrack is just so unique and so difficult. So much fun to watch for us to watch these drivers do their thing, and amazing races all weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
All right. So, the main reason I wanted to talk with you was to get your perspective on what's happening this weekend at North Wilkesboro Speedway. As someone who made their first Cup start there back in 1981, what was your reaction when you found out that track was coming back and was going to host the All-Star Race this year?
obviously I was excited. I was crushed to see the track come off the schedule. That was my favorite short track. I made my very first NASCAR Winston Cup start at North Wilkesboro in 1981. And we had a huge win there in 1990. And I've been helping my son a lot with, he started Mark Martin Archive. Mm-hmm. And so it's markmartinarchive.com. And we have that win diecast is just about to start shipping. Yeah. So, you know, it's a really cool. He's going back and doing a bunch of old wins, you know, like the 1997 Talladega win diecast, where we set up the record of 500 miles, 188.3 miles an hour and stuff. So I've been helping him a lot. Tracking down Folgers was quite the chore to get them to approve that diecast. But we managed to do it, and we've managed to do the same actually with even Stroh's. So that Rockingham, my first win ever at Rockingham, 1989, diecast is in the works as well. So we've been doing a lot of cool stuff. Matt's doing a lot of stuff like that. And, you know, I just I feel my time just working on things, piddling on things.
Jared? And actually, North Wilkesboro, I was born a few months after the final race. So not a lot of the fans, especially the younger fans, realize how important North Wilkesboro is. Can you describe the importance of this, who aren't familiar with the history of the sport, how important North Wilkesboro is to NASCAR?
Man, it goes all the way back, you know, in history. I didn't really, when I was a young racer, I didn't acknowledge or really look back that much at our history. And I'm sure young guys today don't do either, but I'm sorry that I didn't. I did personally know Tim Flock and was at multiple social events that he was at. And we talked and laughed, but dude, I didn't ask him enough questions about racing with the monkey in the car and all that stuff. And I mean, the history is so important. Where we've been means really so much. And so to be able to go back to North Wilkesboro and bring a flavor of the 80s, 70s, 80s back to today's NASCAR and today's race fans is just really important.
Why do you think, I mean, this is going to be the first NASCAR race there since 96. All these years later, why do you think that track specifically has stuck in people's imagination? Like, what is the lasting appeal of North Wilkesboro?
Oh, I just think it's Saturday. It feels like Saturday night racing. I think that's the lasting appeal. Right now, there's a lot of hunger for the 80s and 90s type stuff, you know, whether it be a merchandise or whatever. It's just really cool. That's in style now. And so to bring this track back and to not completely modernize it, mm-hmm, is really cool for them to try to preserve as much of the history so that the fans can get a taste of, you know, what it was like back in the day. Some of the fans, you know, were there back in the day. And then some of the new fans get a taste of what it might have been like.
And speaking of the 80s, you know, you made your first start NASCAR Winston Cup Series start in 1981. Do you remember anything from your first start at North Wilkesboro?
Absolutely. Remember, we qualified fifth. You know, my first race with my own car, my own little ASA late model team. I expected to do good. And I remember, you know, in ASA, they never, ever put us on a racetrack when it was wet, damp. Well, it was sprinkling, and they said, start your engines, and I was freaked out. And I'd never run a rear end cooler, and I don't know why. I just thought, well, I'm not going to turn this rear end cooler on because we're not going to be racing. So started the engine, and we rode around on pace laps for a little bit, and then they threw the green. I never turned on the rear end cooler. So I burned up the gear early in the race. The rear gear burned up, and we stopped and changed out the rear gear. And I finished off the race, but the car fell off the tires real horribly. I had a bunch of rear weight in it. I ran the same weight distribution that I ran in my late model in it because I didn't know any better. And actually, I thought I did know better. I thought I knew better than those guys. And all that rear weight would just blow the rear tires off that that thing on a long run with all that weight, you know, 3,700-pound car back then.
So why did you – why North Wilkesboro? Why was your first start there?
Was trying to steal a win. I did five races on short tracks. I built this car, you know, specifically to run a little racetrack. And I was going to run five races to be able to preserve my Rookie of the Year status for 1982. And I was just going out to try to steal a win. And, you know, we did steal two poles, and we led two races, and we finished third at Martinsville. So we did, you know, we did do good. We didn't quite get a win, but we did do well and learned a lot.
So something I didn't realize, I guess, until they did the whole iRacing thing a few years ago when they went to the digital North Wilkesboro. So I didn't know about the inclines. I didn't know, like, the front stretch was going downhill and the back stretch was going down or uphill. So when it came to setups for your car, what was, like, specific, just over the years, I guess, what was specific to a setup for a car at North Wilkesboro that maybe you wouldn't do at other short tracks because of, like, the inclines, I guess? Anything?
Nothing.
Wow.
You just, you know, you addressed it like you would anywhere else. It was a different racetrack from Martinsville. It probably might have required a little bit more right front spring. It was, you know, it actually was a little bit different than Richmond. Richmond at the time was just a half mile, fairly flat track too. Well, I was used to going to racetracks that were different every week, you know, for my late model days. And I just, you know, in 77, I just started pavement racing. So by 81, I'd been going to a new racetrack every week or, you know, every few weeks. So it was just another racetrack to me. It is, you know, the characteristics are pretty loose getting into one, going downhill into one, not so much going into three, but, you know, it was just a challenge like any other racetrack. It had its own unique personalities.
So it's in my opinion, Valvoline paint schemes almost always don't miss. They're always great. And you had a lot of great ones. So I was wondering, of all your Valvoline schemes, which was your favorite?
The 96-97, you know, lineage was my favorite. My most remembered for the 92, you know, to 90, you know, 96.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was probably the most memorable for the fans. And then, of course, the Flying Vs, that was great too, you know, 98, 99, 2000, with a little variation there. But they were just iconic. Man, the red, white, and blue popped. You could always find a car on a racetrack. I mean, I didn't even realize at the time how incredible those paint schemes really were until I look back out, you know, on them now and see, you know, what they're like, you know, how they looked and how they looked as compared to other cars on the track back then.
So speaking of one of the Valvoline paint schemes, kind of last fall, you were at Las Vegas and you were taking laps around with a car, a JR51. Tell me about the process of, like I said, how you were able to run that restored car and what it meant to you to run laps around in that car again.
Well, the fall race at Vegas, starting last year, are going to honor a legend. Last year, the first year they were going to honor a legend, they thought they should honor the guy that won the inaugural race. And that happened to be me. You know, Landon Best came across JR51, the car that we won the race with there in 98. He came across it about 6 months before the race, was able to get his hands on it, and found out that You know, it was the car that won the race. We won four races with that car that year. Was my favorite car. And so he hurried up to get it restored and got it restored back. And you may have seen it at Darlington this weekend. It was there this past weekend. It was there as well. It's just really cool car. And when I slipped down in that car, it was like 24 years just disappeared. The seat hadn't been moved. The steering column hadn't been moved. You know, everything was still in it like it was when I raced it last. And it was really kind of an eerie feeling to stand next to the car before the race on pit road and have Matt and Arlene standing there with me. It was almost like race day. You know, you just almost felt like it was 24 years ago.
So a lot of talk around NASCAR these last few weeks has been about aggressive racing and what's over the line and stuff. And I know back in 2012, you had your own kind of run in with Joey Logano at Pocono. What are your thoughts on aggressive racing these days? And just as someone who's spent time in the sport, but now you're outside it watching, are people being too aggressive these days, specifically like with Ross Chastain and what he's been in the headlines a lot?
Well, I mean, we're talking about a different day and age. So you're asking me to comment on something that if I made my comments, I feel like would be stupid. You know, it isn't the late 90s or mid 90s. It's just not. It's 2023. The cars are different. The racing's different. The rules are different. Cars are closer to the same speed. You know, it's, you know, sometimes I say, you know, like, for example, Talladega, but really any race, it shouldn't be 3 hours. They should just start everybody and have, we're going to have three green, white checkers here. Just, I mean, that's the kind of excitement that we expect and watch. You have one every race just about, and all they do is run over each other. And that's exactly what I said 30 years ago when we were restrictor plate racing. It was like setting a car on the interstate, setting all the cars at 55 mile an hour and see who could win. Well, you're just going to, you can't outrun them. So you just run all over them, cut them off or whatever. We expect exciting racing. We expect, you know, we have come to expect a little bit of paint swapping. Bump and runs, you know, are common. Would be something that if I raced today, I would have to participate in. And it's fun to watch. what's everybody crying about? It's fun to watch. Chastain makes a bunch of people mad, and he also makes a bunch of people glad. Who's that remind you of? You remember the man in black?
Yes, sir.
Man, he made a lot of people mad. And he also made a lot of people happy. And so, you know, I think that we just have to come to grips with it, that that's the way it's going to be. It's not as easy to pass cars as it was in the 90s. So you've got to get it done when you can. And, you know, on a restart or if you have a run, back in the day you had a run and the hole was closing up, you'd back out.
Mm-hmm.
You can't back out now. And if you do, somebody else takes advantage of you. And so you can't. And even the old guys, you know, like Truex or old guys like the veterans, Truex or Harvick, or even Denny Hamlin, you know, they're having to race more aggressive than they did when they first started, because that's the state of, you know, that's kind of the climate that we're in now.
So you kind of answered what was going to be our next question. So you brought up Dale Earnhardt, and people have been trying to make that comparisons with Ross over the last few months or so. Do you think that's like the closest driver to compare Ross to when it comes to that aggressiveness?
No, drop that, dude. Just drop it. There will never be, you know, a driver you know, that is that you're going to say he's just like Dale Earnhardt. Mm. Dale Earnhardt was one of a kind. He was, incredible in his era, and we're seeing greatness in our in today's era as well. I'm seeing greatness like you wouldn't believe out of Kyle Larson, Ross Chastain. Ross is fun to watch, man. I love to watch Ross. You know, he's man, he wants it bad. So, yeah, but you know, I'm not going to compare anybody to Dale Earnhardt.
Well, I guess what I was trying to ask is, like, of the drivers you raced against, who most reminds you of Ross Chastain, I guess?
Oh, I don't know. That's a tough one. You know, Ross is Ross. He's arguably the most aggressive guy out there right now. He really wants it. I mean, everybody wants it, but Ross wants it. You can tell in Ross's, you know, by watching him race, he wants it so bad that sometimes he gets himself in trouble. But I don't want to compare him to anybody.
Okay.
He's Ross.
All right, Jared.
Well, obviously you've been through quite a few different generations of cars, but you haven't raced in a next gen car. I'm kind of more curious, what track would you like to try the next gen car with? Take a couple laps and see how that feels compared to, you know, other, you know, generations of NASCAR.
I have no interest in driving a race car at all. Zero. But if I did, the racetrack that I'd like to get out on and all would be COTA. Yeah, that's just really looks special.
That's a surprising answer. What do you like about it?
It's beautiful. It's a road course. It looks like a fun road course. I liked road course racing. Oh no, I like it. I just like it.
Okay.
And with one thing though, but I want to ask one thing too. Also, more recently in the news, I-30 Speedway, kind of a dirt track that's local to Little Rock, recently closed down. And obviously we had the revival in North Wilkesboro. What track would you like to bring back from the dead? If there was one track that you could spearhead that you want to come back?
The Fairground Speedway at Nashville. Yeah, and it might happen. We desperately need that old school Saturday night flavor. We need more of that.
Okay. So going back to what you said earlier about, you know, getting the race win die cast with like Folgers and stuff, what goes into, you said it was hard to track Folgers down. Like what goes into that whole process of getting that stuff approved and made?
You have to get with the legal team. Mm-hmm. And you have to, you know, get your artwork that you've designed up to their legal team and have, you know, and a contract, and, you know, they have to look it all over and approve it all and get the language like they want in the contract. You know, it's just a pain.
Yeah.
And, you know, you, like a diecast, you have to get approvals from Ford, from Roush, from, you know, the major sponsor, be it Valvoline, Strode, you know, whatever. You have to get approvals from all those. It takes a lot of, and, you know, you might send an email or try to make a contact and never hear back from them. Or you might hear back from them in 6 months, or you might send 5 emails before you ever get, you know, hear back. You know, I mean, it's, yeah, it's tough. I'm really proud of Matt for all the success that he's having with it. And the fans are eating it alive. I mean, they're not only doing that, the diecast, but he's doing really cool retro shirts and apparel stuff as well. And we have other things in the works, you know, a book, maybe a coffee table book as well. A lot of things are, you know, it just takes a long time and a lot of work to make these things happen.
While we're talking, today is the 25th anniversary of your first win in the Winston back in 98 when you you won over Jeff Gordon, who ran out of gas on the last lap. So I was wondering, what do you remember about like those final two laps and when you're suddenly in the lead?
Well, I was racing Bobby Labonte for second place, and we were coming, we went into three, we were going to be coming around for the white flag, and I got a nice little run under him, got under him coming up off of four, and that was actually for the win, and we didn't know it. As we come off of four, I'm, you know, on the inside, kind of, you know, overtaking him. I see Jeff Gordon pull to the inside down by the start finish line. You know, he slows up and pulls down. And I'm like, dude, what, the caution? You know, I couldn't believe it. It's a really big surprise. And those kind of wins are really the most fun. That one was really fun because we had no idea that we were going to win the race until we, you know, came and got this white flag. And it was kind of the same deal in the Busch race at Myrtle Beach in 87. Tommy Ellis was gone half a lap ahead of me. I run in second. All of a sudden, coming down the backstretch, there he is on the inside coasting. He's out of fuel. And it was just so exciting because you never thought you were going to win. And then, boom, there it is.
Jared, do you have any more questions?
I think we're good. But like I said, appreciate your time, Mark. I absolutely. Oh, wait.
I have a couple more questions. I just want to make sure you were good, Jared. This is a question from my dad. I asked my dad if he had any questions for you, and he wants to know, what's the fastest you've ever driven in any car? Like, what have you topped out at?
In 2012, we were hitting 218 the end of the straightaways, multiple places, Michigan, even Indy, we were hitting, 215 or so. So I'd say 218.
Okay. What about outside of a cup car? What's the fastest you, or outside a race car, what's the fastest you've ever driven?
As far as I know, 142. That's what my dad's Dodge Charger would run. I was not driving. That was back in 1970. That thing, it would run 142 mile an hour. As far as I know, that's the fastest I've been in a passenger car.
Okay. And I guess for my last question, I think I know what the answer to this might be. But if you were given a mulligan on any race in your racing career to do over, what would it be?
There's a bunch of them I would like, but probably not the biggest one, but the most, it would save me the most embarrassment would be the dumbass move of pulling in one lap before the race was over at Bristol in the Busch race.
Okay.
That would have saved me a lot of embarrassment. There were some other races that, you know, I look back on and wish I'd have made a different choice. That might have made, you know, won us a Brickyard two different times, actually, that we might have could have pulled off a Brickyard with a different choice that I could have made. But that's in the past.
All right. Is there anything else you'd like to mention about the North Wilkesboro this weekend and the significance of what this event is for the sport?
I just hope all the fans really enjoy it and really take in the flavor of the history and the past. And I want to thank them for all the support that they gave me through the years that kept my career alive. Really, the fans kept my career alive for a long, long time. So I want to thank them.
All right. Well, thank you, Mark, for taking the time out of your day. I hope we can do this again sometime soon. Have you back. Got a lot more questions we'd like to ask you about your career. So thank you.
Okay. All right, man. You guys have a good day.
Thank you. All right, Jared. Well, I enjoyed talking with Mark Martin. That was my first time to do a actual one-on-one type interview with him. I did get to ask him a question when he was at Las Vegas last year, which was really cool. Seeing that car, his number six car from the 98 season, was awesome. Because that's my favorite Valvoline scheme.
Yeah.
That's mine.
I mean, that you can't beat that with the cleverness, with the Vs. It feels like a very fast race car with that paint scheme.
I didn't know until, like, I guess recently, that those were V's flying off.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
The more you know, but I mean, we're thankful that Mark Martin was able to join us on that. I mean, really insightful with North Wilkesboro and his kind of his career on that. So, like I said, we hope you guys enjoyed that. But, I mean, Danny.
And we hope to have him back at some point.
But you're going to be there. I think it's something we need to point out. You're going to be there at North Wilkesboro this weekend.
Yes, I am.
How excited are you?
I am. I'm only can go to like three, maybe four races this year. I've already been to the Daytona 500. I made it a point. Like, I need to be at North Wilkesboro. This is a once in a lifetime thing to go to the first race back there. There'll be more races there.
Yeah.
There in the future. But I wanted to be at the first one. And so, yeah, I will be going there for both frontstretch.com and Speed Sport. But hopefully, I can also get some content for this podcast to use. It's going to be a madhouse. There's 30,000 permanent seats at this track. Total, there will be about 40,000 people there if you factor in teams, crews, all that stuff. It's this little small track built in like 1947 that's gotten a facelift for the modern era, and I cannot wait.
I mean, I feel excited for you. I'm taking a little bit behind the scenes work that weekend too. I will not be there. But I mean, I don't want to say comparative, but I felt something different when I went to the Snowball Derby this last year. You felt the atmosphere and the racing. This is like 10 times bigger than that. It's like I said, it's the superstars on that short track. So like I said, you make sure to follow Daniel McFadden all along this weekend to get the latest content and stories, from the track as well too. So like I said, I'm excited. And where can they find you, Daniel? That's the important question.
Yes. While I'm in North Wilkesboro, you can follow me on Twitter at Daniel McFadden, all one word. And if you want to give us feedback on the show, give your feedback to the Mark Martin interview, you can email me at dmcfadden@adgnewsroom.com. And Jared, where can they find you?
And they can find me on Twitter at RealJaredHaas.
All right, well, that will do it for this week at Dropping the Hammer with Daniel McFadden. Once again, thank you, Mark Martin, for taking the time out of your week to talk with us. But yeah, we will be back next week to recap what's going to be a memorable, memorable weekend at North Wilkesboro. So I'm Daniel McFadden. This has been Jared Haas. Have a great weekend and enjoy the race. Sunday, 7 o'clock p.m. Central, Fox Sports 1. Have a great week, everyone.